The final term of one of the most controversial governors in New England history will come to an end today. Maine Republican Governor Paul LePage leaves office with record low unemployment, a lower state income tax, and a reformed state pension system that was hurtling toward crisis when he took office 8 years ago. But LePage's legacy could be complicated by his words and his deeds. He'll likely be remembered for defying the conventional standards of political behavior well before the emergence of Donald Trump, whom he supported. Reporter Steve Missler has this look at the tenure and legacy of Paul LePage.
Paul LePage has made a political career out of shocking people, beginning with his victory 8 years ago.
Despite all my gruffness and whatever you want to call it, I was right for the time.
When LePage took the oath of office on January 5, 2011, the unemployment rate was 8%. Budget cuts had forced state workers to take furlough days. And so LePage, a businessman who had overcome poverty and abuse as a child, promised to bring austerity to state government and to be an agent of change.
My pledge to Maine people is very simple. It's going to be people ahead of politics.
I think he came into the statewide political arena viewed by many as, you know, as a breath of fresh air.
Former Senate President Kevin Ray and other Republicans were eager to team up with LePage, but Ray says he was concerned that the new governor, who had narrowly won an election in a five-way race, would try to do too much and too soon.
I felt a responsibility to make sure that we didn't overreach.
Republicans were also worried about LePage's temperament. A week after being sworn into office, he refused to attend the annual Martin Luther King breakfast in Portland. When a reporter asked why he had turned down the invitation from the local chapter of the NAACP, LePage made national headlines with this response.
I'm going to kiss my butt.
And then he ordered the removal of a mural depicting the history of the labor movement from the Maine Department of Labor, sparking protests. At times, the controversies drowned out LePage's push to overhaul the state pension system, cut taxes, reduce regulations, and bring charter schools to Maine. Former Senate President Kevin Ray says LePage was also impatient and tough on fellow Republicans.
In so many issues that came up there where he should have declared victory, instead he was unhappy that he didn't get it all.
LePage would get even less after the 2012 election. Democrats reclaimed control of the legislature, largely stalling the governor's agenda and sparking battles over Medicaid expansion, welfare, and the state's hospital debt. But LePage showed no signs of softening his style. Later in 2013, when it was clear that he was on the losing end of a bruising budget battle, he directed this crude sexual remark at Assistant Democratic Leader Troy Jackson.
Senator Jackson claims to be for the people, but he's the first one to give it to the people without providing Vaseline.
The verbal knife fights continued into 2014, LePage's re-election year. And the Maine Democratic Party, says former Chairman Ben Grant, believed that the governor was politically vulnerable.
He had a number of high-profile gaffes that we felt like might have made him personally unpopular compared to when he was first elected.
Democrats recruited 2nd District Congressman Mike Mishu to challenge LePage. The party focused its campaign on the governor's reputation as a national embarrassment, an image that the Republican Governors Association deftly turned into a positive in a TV spot.
Blunt, honest, one of a kind. Paul LePage, he's unique. Like Maine.
Grant now acknowledges that the Democrats had made a tactical error. And as the campaign unfolded, he says he saw something alarming in public opinion polls.
LePage was able to rehabilitate his approval rating through the campaign. Now, that's unusual. Most politicians start a campaign sort of at the peak of their popularity, and it gets worse as the attacks come in. But LePage, the opposite happened.
LePage won by a wider margin and more votes than he did in 2010. He was triumphant and validated, and his inauguration speech teased an ambitious proposal to finally slay his white whale.
I will give you a hint. We're going after the income tax.
He ultimately got a tax cut, but he vetoed the budget anyway, saying it didn't go far enough. In the 2015 budget battle, effectively split Republican legislators into two groups, those willing to work with Democrats and those loyal to LePage. The balkanization carried into LePage's final years, paralyzing the legislature and leading to the first state government shutdown in nearly three decades. But LePage seemed inspired by the divisions in Augusta, and so he launched a series of forums that effectively doubled as a campaign against the legislature.
All right, get out of here, please. Get a life. Get a life.
The meeting sometimes drew protesters, and they ignited several of the governor's greatest controversies, including this comment about the public health threat posed by immigrants.
And what happens is you get hepatitis C, tuberculosis, AIDS, HIV, the Zika fly, all these type of other foreign diseases that find their way to our land.
These comments were widely condemned, but arguably put LePage on the leading edge of the simmering nationalism stoked by the man who would later become the Republican nominee for president.
You know, the last few days, media's been asking me, are you still supporting Donald Trump? The answer is very simple. Yes, more than ever.
But not long after warming up the crowd during an August 2016 rally in Bangor, LePage suddenly disappeared from the Trump surrogacy tour. The reason was never made public, but it coincided with the release of this profanity-laced voicemail to a Democratic state legislator.
You little son of a socialist. I need you to this freaking, I want you to record this and make it public because I'm after you.
The verbal assault on Representative Drew Gittin was just the half of it. LePage also openly fantasized to reporters about challenging Gittin to a duel and pointing a pistol right between his eyes. For about 24 hours, it appeared that the governor had finally gone too far. But LePage survived once again, as loyalists in the legislature refused to convene a special session for a censure vote. The governor's durability frustrated his opponents and coincided with the ascension of Trump, who relished in being coated in a similar kind of Teflon.
The people, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
And like Trump, LePage held special contempt for the press.
I have no respect for you at all. Make no bones about that.
From the beginning of his tenure, LePage had promised that his administration would be the most transparent in state history. But he routinely flouted Maine's public records law. He is still holding documents about his official travel and his use of public money to fund his multiple lawsuits to block the voter-approved expansion of Medicaid, close the Downey's correctional facility, and withhold money from Maine's public campaign finance program.
I'm a victim of my own passion.
In his final appearance on Maine Public Radio's Maine Calling program, LePage said he's proud of his accomplishments and remained unapologetic about his approach. He said the brutality experienced during his early years when he fled his abusive father and lived on the streets of Lewiston taught him to be a counterpuncher, a characterization that would likely stun those blindsided by the governor's relentless quest for political dominance.
I did it my way, yes, and I tried to do it the best way that I knew how. And if I would have done what people have asked me, I'd have been an ordinary governor who got nothing done.
For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Steve Missler.